Chapter 54. Suspector. It was an old-fashioned 8-day clock, of workmanship suited to the rest of the antique furniture, that Manston had collected there, and ground heavily during winding. Anne had given up all idea of being able to watch him during the interval, and the noise of the wheels prevented her learning anything by her ears. But, as she wound, she caught sight of his shadow on the wall at her right hand. What was he doing? He was in the very act of pouring something into her glass of wine. He had completed the maneuver before as he had done winding. She methodically closed the clock case and turned round again. When she faced him, he was sitting in his chair, as before as he had risen. In a familiar scene which has hitherto been pleasant, it is difficult to realize that an added condition, which does not alter its aspect, can have made it terrible. The woman thought that his action must have been prompted by no other intent than that of poisoning her, and yet she could not instantly put on a fear of her position. And before as he had grasped these consequences, another supposition served to make her regard the first as unlikely, if not absurd. It was the act of a madman to take her life in a manner so easy of discovery, unless there were far more reason for the crime than any that Manston could possibly have. Was it not merely his intention, in tampering with her wine, to make her sleep soundly that night? This was in harmony with her original suspicion, that he intended secretly to abscond. At any rate, he was going to set about some stealthy proceeding, as to which she was to be kept in utter darkness. The difficulty now was to avoid drinking the wine. By means of one pretext and another she put off taking her glass for nearly 5 minutes, but he eyed her too frequently, to allow her to throw the potion under the grate. It became necessary to take one sip. This she did, and found an opportunity of absorbing it in her handkerchief. Plainly he had no idea of her counter moves. The scheme seemed to him in proper train, and he turned to poke out the fire. She instantly seized the glass, and poured its contents down her bosom. When he faced round again she was holding the glass to her lips, empty. In due course he locked the doors and saw that the shutters were fastened. She attended to a few closing details of housewifery, and a few minutes later they retired for the night. 5. From 11 o'clock to midnight, when Manston was persuaded, by the faint heaviness of her breathing, that Anne Seaway was asleep, he softly arose, and dressed himself in the gloom. With ears strained to their utmost she heard him complete this operation. Then he took something from his pocket, put it in the drawer of the dressing table, went to the door, and down the stairs. She glided out of bed and looked in the drawer. He had only restored to its place a small phial as he had seen there before. It was labeled Batley's solution of opium. Apostrophe she felt relieved that her life had not been attempted. That was to have been her sleeping draught. No time was to be lost, if she meant to be a match for him. She followed him in her nightdress. When she reached the foot of the staircase he was in the office, and had closed the door, under which a faint gleam showed that he had obtained a light. She crept to the door, but could not venture to open it, however slightly. Placing her ear to the panel, she could hear him tearing up papers of some sort, and a brighter and quivering ray of light coming from the threshold an instant later implied that he was burning them. By the slight noise of his footsteps on the uncarpeted floor, she at length imagined that he was approaching the door. She flitted upstairs again, and crept into bed. Manston returned to the bedroom close upon her heels, and entered it again without a light. Standing motionless for an instant to assure himself that she still slept, he went to the drawer in which their ready money was kept, and removed the casket that contained it. Anne's ear distinctly caught the rustle of notes, and the chink of the gold as he handled it. Some he placed in his pocket, some he returned to its place. He stood thinking, as it were weighing a possibility. While lingering thus, he noticed the reflected image of his own face in the glass, pale, and specter-like in its indistinctness. The sight seemed to be the feather which turned the balance of indecision. He drew a heavy breath, retired from the room, and passed downstairs. She heard him unbar the back door and go out into the yard. Feeling safe in a conclusion that he did not intend to return to the bedroom again, she arose and hastily dressed herself. On going to the door of the apartment, she found that he had locked it behind him. A precaution that can be no more, apostrophe she muttered. Yet she was all the more perplexed and excited on this account. Had he been going to leave home immediately, he would scarcely have taken the trouble to lock her in, holding the belief that she was in a drugged sleep. The lock shot into a mortise, so that there was no possibility of her pushing back the bolt. How should she follow him? Easily. An inner closet opened from the bedroom. It was large, and had some time heretofore been used as a dressing or bathroom, but had been found inconvenient from having no other outlet to the landing. The window of this little room looked out upon the roof of the porch, which was flat and covered with lead. Anne took a pillow from the bed, gently opened the casement of the inner room, and stepped forth on the flat. There, leaning over the edge of the small parapet that ornamented the porch, she dropped the pillow upon the gravel path, and let herself down over the parapet by her hands till her toes swung about 2 feet from the ground. From this position she adroitly alighted upon the pillow, and stood in the path. Since he had come indoors from her walk in the early part of the evening, the moon had risen. But the thick clouds overspreading the whole landscape rendered the dim light pervasive and gray. It appeared as an attribute of the air. Anne crept round to the back of the house, listening intently. The steward had had at least 10 minutes start of her. As he had waited here, whilst one might count 50, when she heard a movement in the outhouse, a fragment once attached to the main building. This outhouse was partitioned into an outer and an inner room, which had been a kitchen and a scullery before the connecting erections were pulled down, but they were now used respectively as a brewhouse and workshop, the only means of access to the latter being through the brewhouse. The outer door of this first apartment was usually fastened by a padlock on the exterior. It was now closed, but not fastened. Manston was evidently in the outhouse. She slightly moved the door. The interior of the brewhouse was wrapped in gloom, but a streak of light fell towards her in a line across the floor from the inner workshop door, which was not quite closed. This light was unexpected, none having been visible through hole or crevice. Glancing in, the woman found that he had placed cloths and mats at the various apertures, and hung a sack at the window, to prevent the egress of a single ray. She could also perceive from where she stood that the bar of light fell across the brewing copper just outside the inner door, and that upon it lay the key of her bedroom. The illuminated interior of the workshop was also partly visible from her position through the two half-open doors. Manston was engaged in emptying a large cupboard of the tools, galley pots, and old iron it contained. When it was quite clear, he took a chisel, and with it began to withdraw the hooks and shoulder nails holding the cupboard to the wall. All these being loosened, he extended his arms, lifted the cupboard bodily from the brackets under it, and deposited it on the floor beside him. That portion of the wall which had been screened by the cupboard was now laid bare. This, it appeared, had been plastered more recently than the bulk of the outhouse. Manston loosened the plaster with some kind of tool, flinging the pieces into a basket as they fell. Having now stripped clear about 2 feet area of wall, he inserted a crowbar between the joints of the bricks beneath, softly wriggling it until several were loosened. There was now disclosed the mouth of an old oven, which was apparently contrived in the thickness of the wall, and having fallen into disuse, had been closed up with bricks in this manner. It was formed after the simple old-fashioned plan of oven building a mere oblate cavity without a flue. Manston now stretched his arm into the oven, dragged forth a heavy weight of great bulk, and let it slide to the ground. The woman who watched him could see the object plainly. It was a common corn sack, nearly full, and was tied at the mouth in the usual way. The steward had once or twice started up, as if he had heard sounds, and his motions now became more cat-like still. On a sudden he put out the light, and had made no noise, yet a foreign noise of some kind had certainly been made in the intervening portion of the house. She heard it. One of the rats, apostrophe she thought. He seemed soon to recover from his alarm, but changed his tactics completely. He did not light his candle, going on with his work in the dark. As he had only sounds to go by now, and, judging as well as she could from these, he was piling up the bricks which closed the oven's mouth as they had been before he disturbed them. The query that had not left her brain all the interval of her inspection, how should she get back into her bedroom again, nor received a solution. Whilst he was replacing the cupboard, she would glide across the brew house, take the key from the top of the copper, run upstairs, unlock the door, and bring back the key again. If he returned to bed, which was unlikely, he would think the lock had failed to catch in the staple. This thought and intention, occupying such length of words, flashed upon her in an instant, and hardly disturbed her strong curiosity to stay and learn the meaning of his actions in the workshop. Slipping sideways through the first door and closing it behind her, she advanced into the darkness towards the second, making every individual footfall with the greatest care, lest the fragments of rubbish on the floor should crackle beneath her tread. She soon stood close by the copper, and not more than a foot from the door of the room occupied by Manston himself, from which position she could distinctly hear him breathe between each exertion, although it was far too dark to discern anything of him. To secure the key of her chamber was her first anxiety, and accordingly she cautiously reached out with her hand to where it lay. Instead of touching it, her fingers came in contact with the boot of a human being. She drooped faint in a cold sweat. It was the foot either of a man or woman, standing on the brewing copper, where the key had lain. A warm foot, covered with a polished boot. The startling discovery so terrified her, that she could hardly repress a sound. She withdrew her hand with a motion like the flight of an arrow. Her touch was so light, that the leather seemed to have been thick enough to keep the owner of the foot in entire ignorance of it, and the noise of Manston's scraping might have been quite sufficient to drown the slight rustle of her dress. The person was obviously not the steward. He was still busy. It was somebody who, since the light had been extinguished, had taken advantage of the gloom to come from some dark recess in the brew house and stand upon the brickwork of the copper. The fear which had at first paralyzed her lessened with the birth of a sense that fear now was utter failure. She was in a desperate position, and must abide by the consequences. The motionless person on the copper was, equally with Manston, quite unconscious of her proximity, and she ventured to advance her hand again, feeling behind the feet, till she found the key. On its return to her side, her fingertip skimmed the lower verge of a trouser's leg. It was a man, then, who stood there. To go to the door just at this time was impolitic, and she shrank back into an inner corner to wait. The comparative security from discovery that her new position ensured resuscitated reason a little, and empowered her to form some logical inferences. 1. The man who stood on the copper had taken advantage of the darkness to get there, as he had to enter. 2. The man must have been hidden in the outhouse before as he had reached the door. 3. He must be watching Manston with much calculation and system, and for purposes of his own. She could now tell by the noises that Manston had completed his re-erection of the cupboard. She heard him replacing the articles it had contained bottle by bottle, tool by tool, after which he came into the brew house, went to the window, and pulled down the cloths covering it. But the window being rather small, this unveiling scarcely relieved the darkness of the interior. He returned to the workshop, hoisted something to his back by a jerk, and felt about the room for some other article. Having found it, he emerged from the inner door, crossed the brew house, and went into the yard. Directly he stepped out, she could see his outline by the light of the clouded and weakly moon. The sack was slung at his back, and in his hand he carried a spade. Anne now waited in her corner in breathless suspense for the proceedings of the other man. In about half a minute she heard him descend from the copper, and then the square opening of the doorway showed the outline of this other watcher passing through it likewise. The form was that of a broad-shouldered man enveloped in a long coat. He vanished after the steward. The woman vented a sigh of relief, and moved forward to follow. Simultaneously, she discovered that the watcher whose foot as he had touched was, in his turn, watched and followed also. It was by one of her own sex. Anne Seaway shrank backward again. The unknown woman came forward from the further side of the yard, and pondered a while in hesitation. Tall, dark, and closely wrapped, she stood up from the earth like a cypress. She moved, crossed the yard without producing the slightest disturbance by her footsteps, and went in the direction the others had taken. Anne waited yet another minute, then in her turn noiselessly followed the last woman. But so impressed was she with the sensation of people in hiding, that in coming out of the yard she turned her head to see if any person were following her in the same way. Nobody was visible, but she discerned, standing behind the angle of the stable, Manston's horse and gig, ready harnessed. He did intend to fly after all, then, she thought. He must have placed the horse in readiness, in the interval between his leaving the house and her exit by the window. However, there was not time to weigh this branch of the night's events. She turned about again, and continued on the trail of the other three. 6. From midnight to 1:30 a.m. intentness pervaded everything. Night herself seemed to have become a watcher. The four persons proceeded across the glade, and into the park plantation, at equi distances of about 70 yards. Here the ground, completely overhung by the foliage, was coated with a thick moss which was as soft as velvet beneath their feet. The first watcher, that is, the man walking immediately behind Manston, now fell back, when Manston's housekeeper, knowing the ground pretty well, dived circuitously among the trees, and got directly behind the steward, who, encumbered with his load, had proceeded but slowly. The other woman seemed now to be about opposite to Anne, or a little in advance, but on Manston's other hand. He reached a pit, midway between the waterfall and the engine house. There he stopped, wiped his face, and listened. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.